After hearing two very interesting talk about origin of life and prebiotic metabolism and RNA world with Doron Lanset and Shostak, it's now time to talk about early cells, and these are obviously synthetic cells. When I talk about synthetic cell, I mean basically the we are using a synthetic biology approach to construct a semi-synthetic minimal cell, which represent basically a model for early cells. And synthetic biology is basically a modern biotechnology using all sorts of different molecules, biological and non-biological molecules, plus different technologies. To build all sorts of different biological device or pathways, biological reconstruct biological function and mechanisms, which is interesting, useful for biotechnology itself, industry in general. But other groups are using synthetic biology to construct efficient minimal cells, so they hope to get cells which are more efficient than the bacteria we know for different purposes, you know, such as bioreactor and so on. And there is another interest which is basically focusing on origin of life, which is our field, and this is to recreate early cells using synthetic biology, as I was saying. And this is basically our approach. So we are you know, building this semi-synthetic minimal cell, representing basically which would represent a model cells for early living cells of early evolution. And first of all, I have to give you an introduction about what we know on modern, you know, simple cells. So talking about prokaryotic cells. And when we talk about, you know, simple existing cells, then the minimal genome is around 400, 500 genes, and this is identified with you know, endosymbiont, you know, parasites, which are you know, bacteria such as Mycoplasma genitalium or Buchneira fidicola. And as I was saying, these are parasites. More recently, as Doron Lanset was mentioning, a smaller genome was discovered, which basically count something like 122 genes, so it's something smaller than what was recently known. And these are again parasite of basically flowing feeding insects. Yeah. So what we are interesting about is to reduce this complexity, and we can do that today just using a synthetic biology approach. Basically, different groups around the world, they use different methodology to reach and to recreate you know, theoretical or experimental minimal cell. And this is based on you know, trying to use you know, simple molecule, trying to reconstruct what is molecular evolution. So, you know, prebiotic from prebiotic world. So this is a bottom-up approach, or there is another approach which is you know, very much focusing on genetics, and this is a top-down approach. So basically, what people do is to you know, trying to mutagenize genes and see if the cell still works and how it works. There's obviously another approach, still a top-down approach, which is a theoretical approach, and they basically compare different small genomes and trying to exclude redundancy or energies which they believe is not a domain basically within these genomes. So we are using an approach which is something in between, which because it's a synthetic approach. So we are, using extant molecules, so biological extant molecule, to construct a synthetic, what I would call semi-synthetic, semi because we're using biological molecules another molecule to build compartments, so this would be synthetic molecule. And then this is basically something in between the two approach. So talking about theoretical minimal genome, there have been efforts to to reduce basically complexity for this genome and trying to present a sort of theoretical model, cell model. And this is a Spanish guy, Andres Moya, which has basically reconstructed, as I was saying before, a core of theoretical minimum bacterial gene set just based on computational comparative analysis of 8 different bacterial genomes. Then he basically end up identifying a core of minimal gene set of 200 and six genes, basically.
So this is just counting the common ones, or like how would, what are the assumptions underlying?
But basically, they look at something which is common in between this genome, and they believe these are, essential. So there are others which. Because this is an iterative approach, then they would exclude genes which they could be specific for a single, genome. Then, obviously, in this way, they build their own model based on this approach. But they obviously don't present any, function cell in terms of the experimental approach. Now. I want to give you a notion, a definition of minimal cell. So if we talk about minimal cell, then what is a minimal cell in terms of life? I mean, we would require a compartment, a vesicle compartment, which would recall basically what we know as the cell membrane, which is obviously in this case much simpler than a cell membrane, existing cell, and this is would be well represented by a lipidic bilayer, and this would contain the minimal and sufficient number of components to call the system alive. Now, if we define the system alive, then we require some terminology. So. And some important function of this for this cell. So we need self-maintenance, so basic metabolism based on the protein synthesis, basically. And then what is very important is reproduction. So the system must reproduce itself. And to do so, then we need a shell reproduction. So therefore, the reproduction of the compartment, and together with the shell reproduction, we need a core reproduction. So that means all the biological molecule for basic metabolism must replicate together with the compartment, and then again to have a defined cell alive, then. We need to introduce, to have the evolution of this system, and then matching what is, cell evolution. Then we require mutation, for the evolution to occur. So a minimal cell should be able to perform some basic functions. Still, then talking about this minimal cell model. With the lowest possible degree of complexity, And then with the, so therefore with a minimum number of genes and protein, so such as enzymes and structural proteins and so on. And this number, you know, of proteins can be very low if nutrients and energies is basically provided from the outside. So we are talking about energy and all sorts of different low molecular weight molecule, amino acids and nucleotides and so on. Yeah.
I'm always confused by this sort of fixation on the minimal number of genes, because in complexity, I don't know, I could also maybe have consider a system with more genes less complex than a system with fewer genes, for example, in a case where then the fewer genes must be regulated in a very complex fashion. Well, you could maybe have a system which has more genes, which has less complex regulation. So what makes really the number of genes so critically important here?
Well, I guess this is something linked with chaotic evolution. I mean, if you consider that, you know, there is a evolution in environment as well, together with our system, cell systems, then you know, these cellular system, they may have acquired, you know, high complexity, which is required for specific environmental condition, you know, linked with stress, defense, and mechanism, and and other all sorts of different pathway to survive in these not permissive environments. So in this case, you can get high, you know, complex system, which then at the end they provide a cell which is, you know, still a simple system, but it's complex. Yeah. So what we are we are trying to do here is to get as close as possible to early cells with the lower complexity as possible. Yeah. So at the time, you know, in existing with the at the right moment, we can only use extant molecule, and whatever information is available to get close to an early cell model. Yeah. So the closer we get to a simple system, the closer we get to a good early cell model, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I'm just confused by the notion of simple, right, low complexity, because why is it really tied only to the number of genes? Again, I just don't really understand that.
Well, I mean, this is my view. If if we follow what is, early evolution, what we heard until now, then we have tried to explain any single, process, such as, nucleotide polymerization to reach, DNA polymers or RNA, and then replication. So therefore, trying to explain how this can evolve in a protein system, a protein synthesis system, and so on. So, I believe that, for this, process, then the, for the you require, a small number of elements, yeah?
But the point is, and then I'm going to shut up, but why not define complexity by the network, right? And if there is a network, then you could say, well, it's not only the number of nodes, it's also the number of connections that somehow defines complexity, right? So you could have a network with very many nodes that maybe has less complexity by a measure of this sort, something that has a few nodes but is highly interconnected.
So, but you are talking about, single steps which they may interact together before even reaching a cell system as I defined before, you know, an alive system. And then this system is very complex, or you know, with high complexity in terms of number of elements. And then to reach the simplest cell, or the one of the earliest cells that you ever had. I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe I think that the issue is, just to try to answer that, is that you're going to provide a rich, complex environment that's not going to be changing. The feeling is you will require a lot of regulatory genes in person. So you're going to have all of the basic machinery and probably not a lot of complicated regulation. And this is the basic machinery you need to have anyway to make proteins. Just try to keep this additional regulatory complexity as low as possible.
Good. Does it make more sense, placing in terms of the number of functions the cell performs? You want to reduce the number of functions to a minimum. And then usually for these very basic functions, it's very highly conserved. So the kind of question you ask maybe doesn't really arise here. I mean, in principle, even have a single protein can have many different switches on its own. But maybe here he's not talking about that situation. Very basic functions which are highly conserved. And we know to realize these functions how many proteins are changing.
I mean, I guess that if this is explained or answer your question, then there is a possibility that we have reached, complicated process, with high complexity, with a high number of elements, for a simple process such as protein synthesis, which was, quite complicated because of, environmental circumstances. I mean, and whatever environment you had, and then. This was more complex than it's really required in a permissive environment. Yeah, so this is possible. I mean, the ribosome itself is a quite complex structure, and then if they all say that there are that the RNA has a main function there as a catalytic, as catalytic molecules, and there are lots of protein involved in structuring this, complex with RNA and protein. But one question is, can we reduce the number of protein in trying to have a ribosome which is minimal but still functioning? Yeah, so this could be one example of quite. High number of elements to reach a ribosome functioning, which is as follow basically a chaotic, evolution, not rational as we would reconstruct it today. Does this answer the question more or less?
But if one were to look at the base of the simple organisms with a small number of genes and look at the connectivity of the genes that are there. So as we reduce the number of genes altogether, do we get rid of the genes with small connectivity, or also and keep the genes with large connectivity compared to organisms with more genes, or is there no such pattern?
I mean, it's difficult to say, but I think this is again the problem we have when we don't have real proof for early evolution. Then we try to to model trying to keep the simplest the system as simple as possible in terms of, in this case, in terms of elements. So therefore, the unity we know is the genetic units is genes. So therefore, we just go ahead with this system. With this approach, we may use or we are using genes which are coming from evolved system. So this is may have never, very likely they've never works at you know, at the early days. So even in terms of number of complexity for the genes and protein itself. So this is just a modeling approach. And then whenever we have more, basically this is a work in progress. So whenever we have more information about what happened in early, in evolution, from whatever source, then we can modify the system.
Right, but I'm sort of asking from the other direction. If you look at the organisms that exist that are functional and are working, and you have those with 500 genes and you have those with, say, 2,000 genes, and you compare the genes there, so do the ones with 500 genes, is that an organism with 2,000 genes with the genes that are not well connected taken out? Or is there no such pattern?
So when you say connected, what do you mean?
I mean that, so there are some core genes that are involved in a lot of networks that are important, that are connected to lots of pathways, right? The idea is also that those are also the genes that are evolutionary conserved because they seem to be important.
Right.
So could you make a statement along the lines that only those important genes are left and the specific genes to organisms are just...
So that I think is the what I was saying before. This is what the computational approach was, the comparison between different simple genomes was taken basically. So they were just selecting for the genes which they were sort of domains.
Okay, so I just made this idea out, and I'd like to know whether it's true or is it.
I don't think so, because a lot of these fundamental genes just do one thing. Right? All the ribosomal proteins, and all they do is bind to the ribosome. All the synthetases, all they do, everyone does one reaction.
So there's no connection between...
They're all really important.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
It's not like they're all doing 12 different things.
But of course there are genes that do a lot of things. For example, transcription factor coding genes and so on. I want to make a comment on this. I think that in transit from 5,000 or 2,000 to 500, oftentimes genes may become more connected in the network, and I will explain. I think that going to 5,000 means more specificity of enzymes. Going back may mean that one enzyme does several related jobs that are more highly specified or more specialized in the higher genome organism. So basically, if you reduce the number of genes, in some respects, it may be so that each node, on average, will have more edges than before.
So, okay,
now,
so
on the other hand, of course, well, that's an interesting question. On the other, you know, there is a problem.
yes.
Don't forget to mention AKIP. So on the other hand, of course, there are hubs in the network that will be indispensable, and these will remain. So there are two sides of this coin.
Okay, but so in a general network, I mean, people have tried to look for these correlations between sort of lethality and
centrality
and being a hub or.
Yeah.
And this is very contradictory. So several people say there's no such connection. So it's saying that also some things which are very have a small number of connections are very important.
Well, as Jack was saying,
yeah,
if you take away one of the ribosomal proteins, you're dead.
Yeah.
But one thing that seems to be true is that the number, so in the prokaryotic genomes, the number of transcription factors grows quadratically with the number of genes. So that has been really shown quite convincingly. Very convincingly.
You mean to the power of 4?
No, quadratically.
Oh, well, sorry, to the power of 2.
Yeah, exactly. Not that anybody knows why it is quadratically. There are some theories out that none of them is really, I think, has been accepted. But it's a very nice statistic. So hundreds of genomes have been sequenced, so number of genes you can also guess quite accurately.
So what you were saying that what makes the difference? That's what I remember is the regulation. Yeah, you know that.
Regulation. So what seems to grow with the number of genes is the number of transcription factors.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
yeah.
So that means...
A part of redundancy, obviously.
More and more.
So this means that as you go back, as was alluded, if you go back,
right.
you go down in
yes.
transcription factors
exactly.
more
yes.
than linearly.
Yes.
But then I will guess
but
you...
I will come back to Jack's proposition that sort of the simple thing is not highly connected, but at the very core thing, its regulation is not so.
But transcriptional transcription factors are typically highly connected. How many transcription factors are there? Like, let's say in a bacterium of 1,000 genes.
Well, so how many?
Many fewer than in 1,000.
Yeah, so in coli there are like a couple of hundred, I think, transcription factors. Yeah. And coli has 4,400 genes.
So each of them is likely to be activating a lot of different genes.
There's actually a hierarchy. There's a more global regulators and more specific.
Has anybody so did that paper on this Carsonella look at how many transcription factors were among these
I should have a look at that, but
this whole discussion sounds like a good discussion to have outside this lecture. Maybe just to set a time, because in this program you're supposed to have some extra lectural discussions, right?
Okay.
So we can name this one.
But I mean, I guess that if you go for a simple system, then even the in terms of transcription factor, then you in a then regulatory genes, then you would reduce, the number
so
of this.
Can I just ask in that minimal set of 206 that somebody derived, were there any regulatory genes in them?
In this selection?
In the set of 206
genes. 206.
You mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I didn't pay attention to the...
In principle, the minimal cell shouldn't need any regulation. I mean, just live in the most comfortable environment.
I think maybe it is anyway. Maybe it has to do that. I'm not even sure whether the question of minimality is well defined. But for example, like what does mean surviving? That you raise the temperature one by 1 degree and this thing dies.
Yeah.
Do you then call it and another guy who has like one transcription factor more survives? So which do you call the minimum? So maybe the minimum is not even a very defined.
The minimum I shouldn't have any robustness or redundancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one that always does.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it depends. You know, obviously this. I mean, this is exactly. But we are talking about laboratory. So this is a permissive environment. So you define the environment. But then obviously I was saying, for a minimal cell, then you would have, in a permissive environment, small number of regulatory genes. Then as soon as the environment can become critical, even in terms of temperature or UV, radioactivity, whatever. Then, whatever system has, one element more to make the system survive. Then this would create higher complexity in terms of regulation genes. Yeah. So it's again selection.
Jack is saying that it should be a rich environment, right? That's what we're thinking.
It's a parasite, so it cannot synthesize most of the amino acids.
No, but I was thinking about the early cells. Not. I mean, the parasites are just existing,
But that should be still extremely robust if you have a rich environment.
You can achieve robustness.
So how do you achieve that?
You can achieve robustness also through statistical variance, right? And that means that some of the cells will do better than others. A new cell might do well, might not do well, depending on which parameters it has. And of course, in terms of fitness, it's better to sense your environment and respond to that. But you can be robust by just randomly choosing some parameter each time you divide.
That means that in a sense it's very, say, probably it's misleading to look at something which is minimal to start with. That probably at the beginning you had something which was not minimal, was a sort of wishy-washy and was more robust.
No, this is...
You can be robust without being complex in the sense of having a very complicated regulatory...
No, this is sure, yeah. I mean, you can have even, you know, quite complicated, you know, protein or enzymes or whatever, which, or in this case, transcription factor, which they have, they intervene in different process, not only one. And this is, you know, you count a small number, but, you know, this is serving for more, you know, function, and then the system is you know, is robust in this.
Should go on,
right? Yes. Yes. Right. So for the construction of a semi-artificial minimal cells, then define a compartment. Then you would entrap molecule, biological molecules such as RNA, DNA, enzymes, and so on, and then this would allow the minimal artificial, or, you know, in this more specific semi-artificial form of life to function. Now, you know, introducing biological the way we are proceeding into introduce biological molecules, as I was saying, even complex molecules such as ribosome within lipidic vesicle such as liposome, which are spherical bilayer, and these are considered the most likely precursor of early living cells in terms of compartment. Now, the question here, as I was mentioning, there is one about self-maintenance. So can we reconstruct a minimal protein synthesis system within liposome? And that's what we are trying to answer this question. And the other one is shell and core reproduction. Can we induce vesicle reproduction in this model and possibly core reproduction, so therefore genome replication and so on. So when we talk about self-maintenance, a basic mechanism, basic metabolism, protein synthesis. So for protein system synthesis, we intend, transcription. So therefore, transfer the message from DNA molecule into mRNA. And then, this second message will be basically translated in a second process with ribosome intervening in the basically polypeptide chain formation, just reading through the RNA message, and in this process, on single tRNA molecule would basically link a specific amino acid to build the protein. So, in different groups, they have trying to introduce protein synthesis within compartment, and they have used a versatile molecule such as GFP, which is easy to monitor, and this was expressed in for this Noro and et al. In groups in Rockefeller University. This was basically entrapped within giant vesicle, yeah, and they have proved to synthesize GFP. So therefore, you see, GFP fluorescence within giant vesicle. Again, another experiment, this was done in our laboratory. These are different compartment system, and this is water in oil emulsion. These are basically drop of water in oil, and basically this would entrap water soluble molecule to synthesize within this drop again this reporter protein, green fluorescence protein. So this system proves protein system to work within compartment, but they have used.
So in these systems, is there actually continuous production of GFP, or is it just produced once and then you see it because it's stable?
No, this is depends, because obviously it depends of the system. And if you go back here, with this work, they have introduced molecular pore at the membrane, such as alpha hemolysin. So this is would, in a tube, would allow low molecular weight components such as energy, whatever, amino acid, and so on, to enter the sustain the system for days, at least 3 or 4 days. So obviously, if you don't have this, if you don't have this high complexity, then the system would, obviously die earlier, right? So this is the case, for example, for this system would go on for a few hours, and then the system would stop. Now, in both cases I presented before, in protein synthesis, they've used an E. coli extract for protein synthesis, for which we don't know composition in terms of number of molecules or which molecules used for this process to drive a GFP expression. So I would call it a sort of black box to synthesize genes which are basically grown in a plasmid. So you entrap, as they have done the previous system I've presented, within compartment, this E. coli, cell-free system, and for protein synthesis, and a plasmid containing the gene of interest, in this case, EGFP. Now, the question is, can we replace this black box in terms of protein synthesis system with a minimal set of enzymes for protein synthesis, yeah? Because obviously for our purpose, we need a defined number, a minimal number of components to synthesize protein. And in Ueda's lab in Japan at the University of Tokyo, they have cloned all the single components from E. coli required for transcription and translation. And this system called Pure System replaces basically this black box provided by commercially from different company. Yeah. So this system is basically, as I was saying, based on all the factors intervening in transcription and translation, and these are number in terms of 37 enzymes plus isolated ribosomes still from E. coli and low molecular weight components. And these, all these factors, they are clones, so therefore the system should be, pure and should not be present contamination of nucleons and other undesired proteins. So we have a minimal set of enzymes for transcription and translation. Now, the question is, does this pure system work in liposome? This was our question. And then this would obviously work well for our, model, yeah? So we have, what we have done, we have basically entrapped this pure system kit provided by Ueda's team together with an AGFP gene clone in a plasmid. So this system would transcribe and translate directly from this plasmid the AGFP protein. And then the idea is to monitor AGFP fluorescence, from which would should come exclusively from within the vesicle compartment. So obviously not from the outside. And we have monitored this system, this experiment, using confocal microscopy. So when we have entrapped all these molecules, this system within liposome, basically in a tube you have a sort of a film of lipids, and then as soon as you add this molecule, with this PS is just a kit, and a few drops of this system, and then in a sort of 50 microliter of water solution, then you have your plasmid and so on, and these lipids would entrap in a liposome formation all these molecules. So now you would ask if you can see this pure system, a minimal set of enzymes synthesizing EGFP within this vesicle. And the answer is yes, in terms of, with this, monitoring with the confocal microscopy, what we see are small vesicles, and we could measure vesicle, small particles such as, 664 nanometers. So this is the confocal image. This is in transmission light. You can identify a structure in the same position. And then if you do an overlap, this is what you see in terms of fluorescence, so coming up from this vesicle. Now, this is just basically another proof where you have these fluorescence spots, and then you try to identify them in transmission light. And then if you do an overlap of these two images, again, you see fluorescence coming from the same structure. Bear in mind that we have made sure that the spectrum of this fluorescence was not reflection, but was really green fluorescence spectrum, at the right emission. And this basically again another picture. So we have reached even size of 550 nanometer, again of the same story. And this is just to focus on the single particle, again smaller than 1 micron, 700 or something. And then again, we have a confocal image, transmission line. We have this small particle matching the confocal image with the, and this basically the overlap. So this proving that this inflation is coming from this single particle. So this is fluorescence was acquired in a range of 550 nanometer. This graph basically shows you the spectrum of fluorescence coming from this single particle, so proving that this was EGFP and not something else.
What is the efficiency of this procedure?
How many vesicles can you? I can't tell you in terms of number. I mean, we could see quite.
If you try a million and one works,
it
maybe not.
So
basically,
like Christmas.
So.
No. It was not 1 in 1 million. I mean, there were more than that. But I mean, you could identify them. The only problem is that many of them, you see spot, green spots. And you believe that this could be, green fluorescence coming from EGFP synthesis. And then when you do the spectrum. Then you find out that this doesn't show you the right spectrum. So we made sure that whenever we were seeing these green spots, matching this structure, then there was a real green fluorescence.
I understand. So why not just taking as a control system where you take away one of the 37 enzymes?
In terms of this comes as a this pure system comes as a kit, and then it's quite it's not something you can you have to go back basically to these single clones and trying to
sorry.
we make them all ourselves, every single individual, and we mix them together and it works. It's definitely something that can be done.
No, sure. But I mean, the only proof the only test I've done here was to use the same system, but without, the pure system without EGFP gene. So we're using something else, and this was not, showing fluorescence. This is something which is, I think, coming later. Yeah, basically, this is what you get. Yeah. So just to make sure that, we were not playing fantasy. I mean, this is obviously.
What's the half lifetime of your GFP here?
I mean, this is again, it's the same, story as before. We were confident that there was synthesis, for. Several hours, and we didn't measure. We were not looking for efficiency. But what is important here is to obviously prove that whenever you see, green fluorescence spots, then these are really EGFP synthesis, I believe.
It is just interesting to ask me how many molecules are being made in these, right? What's the rate of production? More than one?
So you mean in terms of EGFP molecule? But in terms of for the purpose of this experiment, what I'm looking for is a system which is working. I mean, even if this system is limping, it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm not looking for efficiency, right? So even if I tell you, I was producing, we have made calculation, this was something like 30 microgram per ml, I think, something like that with the pure system. But in terms of EGFP, but again, what we want to prove here is just protein synthesis within Vesium with a minimal number of components. In this case, this was provided by pure system, right? This is something. Now, this is again show you confocal images of EGFP fluorescence from liposome, and this is we have made several tests. On the background, because we could see some green, reflection, and then obviously together with the green spots which they show the right spectrum, then we were basically, and this is one of them, right? So we were just testing the background and see if there was any EGFP fluorescence. This could prove that obviously you have EGFP synthesis on the outside. But because in this experiment we have, as soon as there was entrapment of the system, we were adding RNAs, so in this background there shouldn't be any EGFP synthesis. So whatever we see green should be just reflection. And whenever we were testing the external system, then this is what we were getting basically. So this is correspond to one just an example here. And this is basically the overlap of these two. Right. Talking about self-maintenance, answering the question if we can reconstruct the minimal protein synthesis system within liposome, then the answer is yes, together with 38 genes, so talking about 37 genes of the pure system plus the EGFP gene, then this is together with ribosome. Isolated ribosome low molecular weight components.
Sorry, but in the question of minimality you haven't really addressed, right?
Why?
Well, I mean, how do you know it's minimal?
Well, you can reduce as much as you like. I mean, this is what we get today. This is a starting point. Then we can, one possibility is to take out some of the component of this pure system. It's, I mean, some tests have been already done and published, so as soon as you you know, you reduce the presence of one of these components, then you see by single, one by one, you see the what is the result. This is in terms of efficiency of this pure system. But then, you know, there is no you know, minimal definition to minimal. I mean, you can reduce as much as you like, as long as it works. I mean, this is a starting point, right? Talking about shell and core reproduction, then for shell reproduction, you obviously require, you know, this means vesicle reproduction. And for core reproduction, you need reproduction of the minimal genome, including the gene expression system, you know, PS. This would then replicate together with vesicle. Now, one question is, can we induce vesicle reproduction? And so you require enzymes to make lipidic membrane. So therefore, enzymes that produce phospholipids, so therefore lecithin, you know, lipids. And one possibility is to focus on the lipid salvage pathway on the E. coli in bacteria. Obtaining, and this basically the pathway, so obtaining phosphatidic acid, a molecule that form per se, you know, lipid bilayers. And these two guys here are, you know, two fundamental enzymes which would, you know, drive you towards the synthesis of, you know, the first molecule which could build, right, a bilayer vesicle. So this a work in progress. Basically, I can only say that with this pure system, these enzymes can be synthesized within liposomes. So the idea is now you can address a question. This is basically the work in progress. So you can use these enzymes together with the pure system within, you know, liposome, starting from a set of precursors. Yeah. This enzyme would produce you the lipids, right? And the idea is that as soon as the, you know, the lipids accumulate within vesicle, then they would move towards, you know, the compartment, the bilayer compartment, and this would induce the growth of the vesicle. I mean, there are, you know, earlier experiments which they proved that, you know, if you add basically such lipidic molecule, then you can cause growth of this vesicle and cause at the end division of this.
Can I ask a couple of questions? So the starting materials are what? Those are all phosphate and
this is basically, yeah, this is basically the, you know, precursor and the two enzymes involved to produce phosphatidic acid.
If those are all phosphate, it probably won't get across the membrane. So maybe you need
the what
the glycerol phosphate, that first molecule. Glycerol 3 phosphate there.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that's gonna cross the membrane.
Now this they should these are enzymes which they are not water soluble, and then they should work on the membrane.
But the enzymes on the inside, right?
Yeah.
Substrate has to get to the enzyme.
Yes, this, you have to provide this
right,
substrate.
So but how is the glycerol 3 phosphate going to get to the enzyme?
You know, you have
both. Not the enzyme, the substrate. How is the substrate going to get the first compound on that left?
Not sure, but this is something you can provide within the system, you know, entrapping the system altogether.
Just going to encapsulate it.
Yeah.
Okay. But then it's going to run out, right? So I mean, eventually for reproduction, you need.
No, this is absolutely right. Again, and this is what we.
No,
sure. But this is basically again, you know, within the frame of the first step of a minimal system for replication.
So if you're a complete minimal system, you need some way for transport of the substrates, as well as just these enzymes. And I'm just trying to think, what else do you need?
Sure. I mean, if you want something which lasts, then you are likely to introduce some pore within membrane, and then, you know, basically you feed the system if you want it to last. You know, if you want just to prove that you can get, you know, molecular biology to replicate, you know, within a compartment, just you know, lipids to, you know, to cause growth and then for division, this is you know, good enough. Then obviously, what is going to happen here? This is something I'm showing here, is that the system will follow. You know, is not regulated. So therefore, you know, what happened is only the vesicle that growing will divide. Yes, because they accumulate all these lipids, so they grow, and then therefore they should divide. So then only the ones which they have all the molecule entrapped within the you know, the vesicle, this system are able to carry on. The other ones, even if one element is missing, this would die.
Then the odds for survival seem to be infinitesimal.
Sorry?
The odds for survival seem to be infinitesimal.
No, but I mean again, I think this is the point is missing. I mean, we are not looking for something which lasts at this stage. Yeah. So again, because we are within,
that's very so, but I think the problem is that it's hard to see how we can possibly get this ever into a direction where it would be self-sustained. Right? And so right, I mean you have something that is minimal in some sense, which is not stably, which is not stable, but then
yeah, but I mean,
would like to see perspective how to
sure, but again, if we project this system, this model system, to the early, you know, events, that there must have been, or you know, easily steps in which this were basically attempt to replicate, replicate the compartment, right? So then you need higher complexity. So therefore, pore membrane or whatever is required to sustain the system, or in a higher, you know, regulation system, you know, even biological system, to have, you know, a cell replication lasting, right? So these are just the first steps, and if you can show that this is replicating, this is just the first step, right? Even if you get two or three.
Understand what else is needed. So I think your idea of, okay, we've got a pore protein that'll help small things get in.
Yeah.
Maybe you need some kind of flippase to get the new phospholipid to go to the outer membrane. Or if you try to think of all these steps, you can maybe build up a more realistic set of components.
No, this is absolutely true, but I mean, it is already difficult to get at this stage, right? So I mean, you know, to prove that you can replicate, you know, a cell this way, until now they have reproduced it with a chemical, you know, approach, right? So, but you see, that the first step of molecular biology to prove, you know, a cell replication with shell and core replication, even if you get two or three. The steps. I mean, it makes sense that this, you know, could have happened in the first day, in the early days. And then, you know, whoever was successful, you know, to improve and evolve the system to something Shostak was you know, suggesting, that obviously this would last. At this, we are going towards something which is closer to a biological, stable replication system. Is it clear?
Well, it's not clear to me, because the components you're using, as you have pointed out, are old components, evolved components.
No, but this is...
So then I have just a very hard time thinking what to make of this in terms of embodied for early life. I mean, it's fine as a synthetic, they understand immediately what right? It's a nice system.
No, no, I perfectly understand, because this is you know, commonly these are the sort of comments they are making on this sort of model. But you know, these are you know, model which you can do today, right? So if you have prebiotic molecule, then fine, you can go have information about how the system was working, fine. This is just a basic, you know, model, and nobody has proved, you know, a simple molecular biology with obviously, you know, existing molecule. I mean, if you don't have anything else, that's what you can, where you can go forward for. That is the point. I mean, as I was saying, this is a semi-synthetic minimal cell as a model. It's not an early cell. If this was an early cell, then the game was done. I mean, just then obviously, as I was saying, this work in progress. Anytime you can modify the system for whatever information is available in terms of evolution. So, as I was saying, this is vascular reproduction is work in progress. And then when we talk about core reproduction, then we require reproduction of a minimal genome, as I was saying, and including self-replication of the pure system. So reproduction of a minimal genome would require at least, we have counted, 7 genes, which are the basic enzymes involved in genes involved in protein involved in DNA replication, as we know. And then talking about PS replication, then we need 54 genes, which are the 37 genes we were talking about, plus the 16 genes of the tRNA molecule, the minimum number of tRNA molecule, excluding ribosome. These are basically theoretical number, right? So talking about ribosomes, okay, we can, as I was saying before, we can, you know, ribosome involved in the translation process, then we can think of reducing the number of these genes for involving the you know, for encoding for ribosomal protein and RNA, ribosomal RNA. So ribosomal RNA genes and genes for ribosomal proteins have been cloned from E. coli, so these are available, so we could play with them. And 54 genes are counted, you know, for present in genitalium, you know, one of the small genome. So based on comparative sequence analysis, this is a published work, we could believe, you know, to reduce the number of protein down to 33 ribosomal protein corresponding to functional domain conserving between all these different genomes analyzed. Then ribosomal RNA, this is interesting, is the, as we know, a catalytic molecule within ribosome. You know, many studies have done to test ribosome and the single molecule component ribosome. And ribosomal protein stabilize and orientate the otherwise floppy RNA into an active structure. So yes, it's true that you know, there are very, you know, few, 3 ribosomal RNA involved in all the different function of the ribosome, but you know, proteins are required as far as the people has tested, you know, understood, to keep the structure, you know, right for the catalytic activity of this RNA. So I believe it is going to be difficult to reduce very much the number of this ribosomal protein, but it's something which obviously we can test.
There's probably a few others that are required for assembly,
correct?
Additional proteins required to assemble.
Yes, this is true. I mean, I was just trying to keep it, you know, simple. But I mean, again, you are right. I mean, there are these other proteins. And then there is also other post-transcriptional factor involved in the, you know, require, which I'm missing here. So I'm trying to reduce the number as much as possible, try to reach a final number, which is down there. But this doesn't mean the system is going to work, obviously. Shell reproduction, you know, we are talking about two genes, co-reproduction for a limping cell. So something which, you know, can have even a minimal sign of an alive cell. So reproduction of a minimal genome, including self-reproduction, would require 60 genes. And 33, as I was saying before, plus the ribosomal RNA for minimal ribosome. So we are down to 98 genes. But as Shostak was mentioning, and as I was saying, this is, we are forcing, obviously, the, you know, the minimal number of genes required, but likely, you know, you are going to have problems with molecule.
The uncertainty goes in both directions, right? Because you don't even know that all the 60 genes, that these are required, it's not tested. It's just a computational, based on some comparative genomics.
No, no, sure. This is still theoretical.
Yeah, it could be lower, it could be higher.
In terms,
presumably higher than
higher, sure.
Pointed out, I mean, there are other genes which are presumably, for example, required, but then this number could be also too high. But you haven't been. Maybe it's 30.
I mean, this exercise was done to try to think, you know, how could have been a cell, you know, at certain stage to reach, you know, a definition of an alive cell. So with self-maintenance, replication, and possible mutation, therefore evolution.
But the point is, if you consider the number of genes needed to make a functional ribosome, it becomes a quality issue because there's a huge body of experimental work that shows that you can take out individually many of those ribosomal proteins.
Yes.
And the ribosome still works, maybe just marginally less well. And, you know, you can, if you take out more and more, you just sort of gradually have less and less efficiency.
Yeah, but in terms of when I was, yeah, I was discussing this matter with, you know, guys which they work with ribosome, and basically trying to find out where I would start to reduce the number of proteins. And then pointed out, as you were saying, that, you know, if you take out one by one, then the ribosomes still work. Then whenever you take out, you know, most of the protein, you try to, you know, to reduce the number, you know, drastically, then the ribosome doesn't work anymore. This is the point. So
whether among, suppose there is a subset of ribosomal proteins that, if taken away one by one, have a very small effect.
Yeah.
So then you ask about a subset of those which can be taken all together and have, say, a 50% effect.
This is
maybe 7 or 9 or something.
Like, you know, based on this work, when I was asking, you know, as I was saying, to expert about ribosome, then can I take away, you know, a good number, you know, and then trying to go down, you know, from 33, then the answer was, you know, unlikely this system is going to work. So the, you know, the.
What was pointed out by Jack is that yes, no is not right. You have to look at it as a graded phenomenon, and it's a question of synthetic lethality. That is, how often, I mean, maybe it's true that whenever you take a pair of proteins, the ribosome dies. Maybe not. It's a question that needs to be asked.
No, sure, but, you know, if you come from, you know, because I was saying these genes are available, then if you start from 54 to 33, then it's already a good start. You have taken out quite many, you know, proteins. So, you know, the point here is this is, going back to the definition I was giving, what is believed is that, you know, RNA has a important catalytic function, but isolated catalytic function, then if the proteins are taken away, you easily lose the activity of the RNA, because this protein, they basically keep the structure in place. So as soon as you take out proteins, then the RNA, even if the catalytic site is there, is not able to work, because it becomes sort of not in the active shape. This is the
possible that, you know, it may be just conceivable, rather, that it may be possible to redesign the ribosomal RNA so as to become independent of protein, which hugely simplify this problem.
Yes.
This is my hope, obviously, but I mean, this is a system which can be tested, because if you have the genes, then you can start and to scale down the number of genes. So, one final comment, and as I was saying, this is an exercise to minimize the number of components, set of genes. For a minimal cell, then using extant biological molecules, I find hard to believe that an early simple cell, although limping minimal cell, defined alive, can ever exist with only 30, 40 genes. Unless we think of low specific enzymes assisting more than one reaction, and then we are talking about ancient molecules. So all this exercise I was doing before, even if it was quite drastic, yeah? So this was just focus on this point. So the more you use, the more you're losing, molecules here. And then based on what we know today, you're facing a situation which likely the system is not going to work, unless you have something which is not, present nowadays, in terms of molecule, yeah? So if we focus on number of components. We may have an independent minimal step controlling independent function within compartments, yeah? So this is even for ribosomes. So you can divide the single function of ribosome to synthesize protein. And then this system, may have been separated, playing just single games, within compartment. Then later on, different steps, they may have, be included together to reach higher complexity and structure and function, such as, for example, ribosome for protein synthesis. So we may have had single molecular activity, which they were, prebiotic to what we know in terms of protein synthesis, but this was not basically providing protein synthesis as we know, right? So only this system coming together and evolving, then they could have reached the structures such as ribosome, right? So my point is, we may require a good number of factor, something like 90 or even more genes, to reach a cell which is then alive. This is the point of this exercise, for what we know today in terms of biological molecules. So, is it?
I guess, so in your first bullet, what do you really mean can have ever existed? Once upon a time?
Yeah. Based on the exercise I've done today.
I wouldn't be ready to buy that nowadays the existing components you may need so and so many genes to build a living cell. But I just don't understand what this has to do with the past.
Now, what I'm saying is that there is a lack of information. So we as I was saying, this system is a model based on extant molecule and biological function we know today, right? starting from this exercise, then I find hard to believe that this number was reaching, you know, a number such as 30, 40 genes. That's what I'm saying today. Unless, you know, we have, different molecules which are not present today. This, as I believe, would justify a different number, as I've shown you before, in terms of 98 or 100.
The obvious suggestion there to replace many of the enzymes with RNA. We know you can make ribozymes that amino isolate tRNAs. You could replace all the synthetases with ribozyme synthetases. That would take out 20 proteins. Probably many of the others.
In terms of, you mean using ribozymes?
Yeah.
Well, this is obviously a possibility, but is this the model, you know, again, for, you know, for early cells? I mean, as I was, you know, discussing with you, asking questions, you know, yeah, we can demonstrate that, you know, with Labry we can synthesize, you know, ribozymes, but then going back to, you know, early times, early, you know, evolution, then how this has evolved in terms of, you know, were they only, you know, first of all, you need to define the probability to have, you know, to reach a number of ribozymes working in an RNA world. And then, you know, you, another possibility, as I was, you know, commenting, then you may have had RNA molecules which they were playing together, as suggested from different, you know, people, which they were interacting with amino acid or peptide and so on to build molecules which they were catalysts, you know, they were catalyzing the reaction, but they were not just ribozymes.
Well, that's the pathway.
Yeah.
I don't understand the point. We are talking about a number of genes. A gene for a ribozyme and a gene for a protein, you do not gain anything by making a gene for a ribozyme instead of a gene for a protein, unless you are willing to say that everything is ribozymes and then you don't need the ribozyme.
Well, that's my view of what came before.
If you have a ribosome and tRNAs and synthesis, let's say the synthesis can be taken away, but still you need genes for it. And the genes for ribozymes are perhaps even, they may be even more expensive in terms of needing to make an elaborate structure, because proteins are more effective than per atom in doing the catalysis.
That's a good reason for your saying RNA.
Yes.
Saying about where you need to start.
No, what I'm saying is, it's sort of, it's besides the point. What Giovanni is trying to do is to count genes. So he doesn't take the genes for what?
Well, the whole reason that his minimal system is so complicated is because you need protein synthesis. That's 98% of that is protein synthesis.
Okay. So
there is a requirement for that.
So you should propose to take away some of the proteins.
Well, I'm trying to ease
I mean, obviously, mentioning you know, replacing protein with RNA, this system can be simplified. I mean, we have started with a pure system, which, you know, based on DNA, you know, working from DNA transcription and translation, but obviously you can believe to simplify the system and then reduce the number of components again, you know, focusing directly on RNA, as you were saying. So in terms, instead of DNA genes, you have RNA genes, and then, you know, you basically would start from transcription and so on. This is obviously one thing we are considering.
Maybe the copying RNA may be harder than copying DNA.
Yeah, that is one point. So I just have to mention the acknowledgement of the people involved in this work. So Luis is basically the coordinator of the Minimal Cell Project. These guys, they were working and helping me with the confocal microscopy work. and then Pasquale Stano and Yutetsu Kuruma, they were you know, basically helping me with the liposome fluorimid, and the salvage pathway work is carried out by Kuruma, and these people are basically funded together with myself from the Enrico Fermi Center in Rome. So we are working at the biology department, University Roma III in Italy.